Well, we all watched the Liberace movie, of course,
yes,
last weekend, Behind the Candelabra, which was based on a book written by Scott Thorson. So I'm curious to know how much dough he got from that, what he thought of it, if he even got to see it, because he was in jail, I think, when it originally aired.
Right.
Now, Dennis Hoff has bailed him out. Our buddy Dennis Hoff from the Bunny Ranch, here's the story. Liberace's former lover, who was just portrayed by Matt Damon, has been bailed out of jail by Dennis Hoff, the owner of the world-famous Bunny Ranch. Thorson's life with Liberace, subject of HBO's Behind the Candelabra, but not covered in the movie, that is the fact that Thorson's been sitting behind bars in Reno since February of this year, waiting to be sentenced on burglary and identity theft charges. I think these had something to do with credit cards. He pled guilty last month after getting busted for using stolen credit cards. His attorney's representing him in July. Dennis Hoff tells TMZ that he decided to help because he felt that Scott Thorson, who has stage 2 colon cancer, was not getting the proper treatment in jail. And listen to this. He will put him up at the Bunny Ranch until his sentencing and will even make sure that he receives his treatments for cancer.
That's fantastic.
Not the other treatments that Dennis provides, although who knows. Let's talk to these guys now. Good morning, Dennis. Scott, are you guys there?
I'm here. This is Scott.
Scott,
hey,
good morning,
Scott,
everybody.
How are you?
How you doing?
Scott Thorson. What a thrill, my friend. Thank you for joining us. Listen, have you seen the HBO movie?
Yes. When I got out that night, I watched it in Dennis's private residence with Dennis and a couple of the girls and Richard, his assistant, and we just had we had the best time. I thought the movie was great. I think it's absolutely amazing, the success of this film. I'm so honored and taken back by it. The performance with Douglas and Damon, very daring.
how accurate is the movie, Scott?
Yeah, the movie is very accurate. They went by the book, and they did a good job, I believe. We took this to the foreign countries, and it's going to open up in the box offices there. And
as a regular movie in the theaters, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, regular movie now in England and France. But now, because of the success, every major country has picked up the film, including Hong Kong and Japan.
Jesus.
They expect it to win a Best Foreign Film. And also they're thinking, they're saying that it's going to win the Emmy, and Mr. Douglas is going to win the award.
I believe
there's
it.
There's no doubt. Scott, I got a million questions for you. Here's the first question, and pardon me for some of my pedestrian questions. How did people, back in the day, when you first got to know Lee, how did people, especially his fans, not have an inkling that he was gay?
Well, I think in Hollywood everybody knew it.
Yeah, but Scott, in particular, like I mentioned this on the air, my grandma, she liked three men that she would go see in Las Vegas: Engelbert Humperdinck, Tom Jones, and Lee Liberace. And if you would ask her who the sexiest is, she would say, oh, Liberace. I can't believe he hasn't met a girl yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it started back in from 1950 to 59 when he had his television show, you know, that famous wink. And every woman in America thought he was winking at him, or at them, rather. And that's how it all started. But, he was, it's funny because the women used to have to drag, the husbands into the show at Vegas. But I'll tell you, after the show, the husbands were the first one to rush the stage to get his hand. Shake his hand.
All right, what about in the movie, Scott? I'm going to go to a bunch of things from the movie that was based on your book, of course. One of the things that Lee gets mad about is the fact that you don't like performing. You like receiving the sex. Was that true between you guys, or was that something they just added for the movie?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's the reason why I'm alive. I was very careful back then, and I have always been very careful, and Lee got the AIDS after I left, and I think he developed it, he was diagnosed in 86, and I left in 82. So somewhere along the line after I left, or he could have had it when I was there, but I've certainly been checking, and it's been, 27 years after his death, I'm still okay. So it's just amazing. how fortunate I was, and because back then, boy, people went fast. You know.
And Scott, here's another thing I want to ask you about: having the plastic surgeries done to resemble Lee. Now, in the movie, at the end of the movie, Matt Damon, who plays you, gets all upset. He's looking at himself in the mirror. He's all coked out. And he's getting mad. He says, "Look at what I did to my face. Do you regret the plastic surgeries that you did that were kind of at the request of Lee?"
Well, let me just go back. You know, back then. You know, here's a kid that came from 17 foster homes and then all of a sudden thrown into this great wealth and fame. And I did anything that I could to please the man. Mm-hmm. We were 48 years difference in age.
Cool.
I was 16 years old. So I did whatever he wanted. Now, you've got to remember, he took me to his surgeon. That's how I got my drug addiction started, was because of the plastic surgeon. And then later on, I introduced Michael Jackson to the doctor, and Jackson got his nose. I'll tell you a funny story.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, go ahead, tell us, Scott.
Tell us, go ahead.
Okay, Liberace gets his complete face done. I have my chin implant, my cheekbones raised, my nose job done. And Michael Jackson's got his nose done, and all three of us put into a Rolls Royce limousine, and we go to recover in Palm Springs at the mansion there.
Jesus, the three of you.
The three of us. And this doctor was, who later on shot himself in the head because we were going to go after him. He's down there, whacked out of his mind, shooting Liberace up, missing the veins and everything, drunk and using coke. It was a crazy time back in that period.
Yeah.
Sex, rock and roll, and drugs.
Was it as decadent as it appeared in the movie? I know in the movie that they used Zsa Zsa Gabor's mansion or her husband's mansion to film it. Was Liberace's mansion as over the top as was what was in that movie? And did you guys really go into hot tubs and bathtubs all the time and just get offed up on drinking champagne and with the bubbles?
Oh, absolutely.
All the time?
Now, the Las Vegas mansion, I'll tell you a story on that. Lee bought that house. He had that house put together for me. He took five track homes, and he bought the whole damn block. Jeez. And he put five homes together in a $100,000 neighborhood, and he spent over $1 million, and it was I called it the Glass Palace, 17,000 square foot, 17 grand pianos. He'd write me a check every year to do the Christmas decorations, and he allowed me to spend $50,000 on Christmas decorations.
Wow,
my God!
450 point set of plants. It was just a beautiful home with about $10-15 million worth of just antiques. Mm-hmm. Just the Baccarat table, which is in the Los Angeles Museum now, is worth over $1 million.
Did you feel that you outed Liberace when you first started writing about him? Did you feel that you were the one that outed him, Scott?
I guess I'm the only one that went public with the situation. Back then, here's what happened. I mean, he discarded me like I was a piece of trash after all those years, and I wasn't going to be discarded like some trick, especially throw my clothes and all my belongings, thrown off the penthouse which he built for me in Los Angeles, and threw him off the balcony.
Oh my.
Now, I went to him, and I went to the attorneys several times, and I asked him, I said, you know, we're going to have to work something out here. I said, you know, Lee, I did this for you. It was your doctor. I said, you're the one who ordered the doctor to give me the drugs. I said, you wanted me thinner. You called it the Hollywood diet.
All right,
and I
says,
and now, and being 48 years my senior, I says, now you don't even offer me rehab. Now, in the movie, it mentioned that he offered rehab, which he never did. I mean, he just threw me out, threw me to the wolves. Wow. And I said, hey, I'm not going to buy this. I don't care how big you are. I'm going to come after you, and I'm going to come after you big.
Now, Scott, am I right about this? You have had surgery after the fact now to remove the implant so that you look more like yourself again?
Well, I took the chin implant out, yes.
Jesus. All right. How about at the very beginning of the movie? Now, I know that a lot of this was taken, you know, for dramatic effect. But at the very end of the movie, as you're walking into Lee's mansion, Aykroyd, who plays his manager, there's another guy walking out. And what they want the audience to think, Scott, is, oh, look, Scott should be seeing that he's replaceable, that as soon as he enters the mansion, whoever was there before is leaving now. Did you have any idea that that was happening in real life at the time? Was there any truth to that at all?
I'll tell you a story. He was with a young man by the name of Vince Cardell. And I came into the picture, and Liberace was still having the relationship with this guy, but he was on his way out. Lee was performing at Jenna Squagga's Nugget, and Vince is there. And one night decides to, Mr. Squagga gives Liberace his Mercedes.
Just gave it to him.
When he comes into town. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, one night, Vince gets in the car and gets in a high-speed chase with the police, smashes the car. he was on drugs, too. And so, anyway, he was still living in the house. And finally, I says, hey, Lee, I says, it's either him or I. I says, he's got to go. I says, he's causing too much problems. So I'm the one who actually said, hey, you got to get out of here quick.
Hey, how many years were you with Lee? The total you guys were together is a couple.
Well, on and off, it was almost 17 years.
Oh, wow.
Jesus, that's a hell of a relationship.
Yeah. Scott, in the end of the movie, Lee calls you to reconcile. How did that make you feel when you got that call? Because he was passing or he was dying, and you went to go see him. What were you feeling traveling out to Vegas to go see him?
Yeah, at first there was a lot of rumors going on, and then of course the Las Vegas Sun printed it, and I knew way back when, and then just by looking at him, and then when he called me and told me to come and see him, let me go back. It was actually, they had it a little wrong. He was actually performing at the Radio City Music Hall with the Rockettes.
Okay.
And he broke all attendance records, and he was there, and he called me from New York, and he says, I need to see you ASAP. And I said, well, what's wrong? He says, well, how's your health? I says, well, my health's fine, Lee. I says, how's yours? Yeah. And there was dead silence. And he says, I need to see you right away. Uh-huh. Well, I took he got me on a Learjet, and I went out there and stayed at the Waldorf Astoria. Met him backstage, and I almost fell over.
Oh, my.
Because of the weight loss, oxygen backstage. I mean, here's a man that's, he's putting on 200-pound costumes, with the fur coats and all that.
Right.
Could barely move across that stage, let alone play. He was missing notes. But I'll tell you something. He went out in the blaze of glory, broke all attendance records.
Showman, no doubt.
A million people there for the 3 weeks. I mean, it was just incredible. He broke all attendance records. No one's been able to beat it. He's broken Elvis Presley's record in Las Vegas, He still holds the World Book of Guinness 25 years after his death for the fastest piano player ever and the highest paid musician. Mm-hmm. Back then, he was making $1 million a week doing 14 shows at the Las Vegas Hilton.
Scott, one of the most amazing things watching that movie was the scenes with Michael Douglas where he would take his wig off and he would be bald and he would not look like him, look like the Liberace we knew. What was that like in real life?
I'll tell you a funny story.
Okay.
He thought I had left the bedroom, and he went into the shower. Well, actually, I did. I went into the kitchen, and then I came back, and it's a huge bathroom and bedroom. And he didn't hear me come in, and I looked, and he was in the shower, but he had the damn wig hanging over the shower door. And when he saw me, he quick slapped it on, and I said, I'll tell you another funny joke. When I was, he got a hold of, I had an ounce of cocaine, and he got a hold of it, and he flushed it. Well, I got so damn mad one day, I chased him down the hallway and we're talking like 3 blocks long, and I pulled the damn wig off because I got so, I said, what the hell did you just do?
Scott, what type of, that's good. What type of a lover was Liberace? Would you describe him? Was he aggressive? Was he the dominant one? Were you in charge? What was it like being with Liberace?
Well, Liberace was into porno, and he was really into You know, he was into all the anal intercourse, and he was into everything. I mean, you know, you name it, he was into it. And I didn't go for all that. You know, I was, you know, just 16 years old. Number one, first, you know, he what he did to me was this. He wanted to adopt me. He had my face changed so I'd resemble his son.
Hold on. I got to stop right there, Scott. Sure. I got to jump in. Adopting you. Again, when I'm watching the movie, I'm thinking, that is the weirdest flipping thing that I've ever seen. I understand he has a relationship with you. I understand that he wants to be your daddy or whatever that is in that sense. But I can't imagine being adopted to a guy and having a sexual relationship with him.
Let me tell you what his motive was back then. He didn't want the press to catch on that I was his lover. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy, I'm wearing $1 million worth of jewelry. Yeah. I have more fur coats and diamonds than Elizabeth Taylor. I'm driving Rolls Royces, 32 cars. So what he did was he said to everybody, this is my son. He my adopted son. He threw the press off that way.
Oh, boy. And again, the press, that wouldn't fly today in 2013. But
he would be in jail today.
Right.
Number one, he'd be in jail. I was only 16 years old at the time.
Hmm. Let me ask you about some of the stuff that doesn't have to do with Liberace in your life. Like, you were a witness in this gangster's trial, Eddie Nash. And then you're put in the witness protection program for a while?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. You know, during the 1980s, it was wild. I went into this guy called Adel Nazarala, Eddie Nash. Owned a bunch of nightclubs in Hollywood, Kit Kat clubs, Club Hollywood, Starwood, Seven Seas, you name it, he had it.
Okay.
And he was a big drug lord. He brought in all the heroin and cocaine, and then he was filtering it through the nightclubs and laundering the money. Well, he was one of the guys responsible for bringing, you know, getting Liberace his young boys. And anyway, Liberace introduces me to him. We go out and we see his club, and we were invited over to his house and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, later on, you know, I said, well, you know, the doctor kills himself, and then he becomes my new drug supplier. And then I decide, what a great business. Boy, I'd love to do this. You know, I have all the drugs. I have the, you know, the money. And I said, what fun. And so I went into the business with him. Well, he also was promoting and was responsible for making John Holmes a big star, the porno star.
Sure.
And one night he ends up getting robbed. Holmes sets up the robbery over $1 million of cash, drugs, and dope out of his Laurel Canyon home mansion. And we were appearing up at Lake Tahoe. I take a Learjet because I picked up a pound of coke from him, and I was going to pick up some of the cash earnings because I went into business with him. And I, on my way up to the house, I come through, and his bodyguard answers the door, and he says, I got to go. He says, but he's in the bedroom. We were just robbed. He says, I'm going to go get the son of a bitch that's responsible for it. And he said to me, so anyway, you know, next thing I know, they bring John Holmes in. And they beat the heck out of him.
Oh, my.
Whoa.
Wow.
And then they were ordered to take him up to the Wonderland address. It's called the Laurel Canyon Murders, Wonderland Avenue. It's called the Wonderland Killings.
Right, the Wonderland Gang, right.
Yeah. Two movies made on that back in the 80s. Anyway, they end up killing four of the girls. The guys weren't there. One guy was there. I mean, three girls, one guy. It was four counts of first-degree murder and one attempted. Well, this set off the biggest manhunt in Los Angeles history because they compared him to Charlie Manson.
Right.
They said that there's never been such a violent crime since Charlie Manson.
Huh.
Well, you know, the FBI, you know, had all, you know, and next thing you know, talk was going on, and the detectives and the FBI and the federal government and U.S. Marshals, they all get wind that, you know, he might be responsible for this. Well, the next thing you know, they've taken pictures, and my car happened to be there, and it was registered Liberace. Hmm. Anyway, they knew that I knew, and they chased me until 1988. They've been wanting me to testify. Well, Nash starts smoking crack.
Oh, boy.
Gets paranoid and decides to have everybody whacked that knew about this.
Crack is whack.
Jesus.
Turns out that I get gunned down and shot five times.
Jesus.
1990.
Took a bullet through the head, hand, the chest, three times through the abdomen. Close range of 38. Well, the next thing you know, I'm 6 months later after being in a coma and then paralyzed. They wake up and surrounding FBI agents, L.A. Homicide, the famous Tom Lang that did the O.J. Simpson murders. Well, he was the lead detective in this. The LAPD failed to keep me safe, so the federal government stepped in and put me on the Federal Witness Protection Program.
Jesus.
And then took me out on the East Coast, and I remained out there for 14 years on the Federal Witness Protection Program. Went off it in 2005, and I said to the marshals, I says, hey, I haven't seen my mother in 14 years. They says, I'm going back. And they said, oh, no, you're not, because that's your danger zone. He says, we'll throw you off the program. I says, well, throw me. I don't care.
Have you ever heard of anyone that has the life that you've had? I mean, with these stories, dude.
It's unbelievable.
All of them incredible. You know, in the movie, getting back to Lee again now, when you would be having sex with Lee would use poppers or,
nitrate.
That's it. What was the point of that? Was that to heighten the experience when he achieved?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I couldn't stand the smell of the stuff, let alone it gives you a big rush.
Okay.
And it's you'll see it in a lot of sex shops. It's called Rush. And a lot of gays buy that. Also, a lot of heterosexuals do, too.
I guess they do. Listen, also in this movie, Lee mentions the fact that his first, when he found out that he was gay, was a member of the Green Bay Packers. Now, do you know if that's true, or is that something you just threw in the movie to be funny?
Well, you know something, I'm not really sure on that. There were so many stories. I don't remember that story, but I mean, he was gay all his life, and his mother forced, and the public and his mother forced him, to date like Sonja Henning but here's the thing why Liberace guarded. You got to figure out the era that he came up in. It would have ruined his career, just like, you know, back then with Rock Hudson. It would have ruined his, big movie star like that. That, you know, oh my God, if they found out about that, there go Doris Day and everything. I mean,
So who were you? Where were you at in your life? Where were you at when you get the call saying HBO is going to take, because this movie was based on your book.
Yeah.
Where were you, and what was your thought when you get the call? When you hear that it's going to be Steven Soderbergh who's going to direct this thing, it's going to be Michael Douglas, and goddamn Matt Damon is playing you. How did you feel?
Well, I'll tell you something. I had I went to prison back in, I was on my way to prison for a drug charge. And so I was awaiting, I was in Banning Jail. And we go into court because I was going to be sentenced, and my attorney hands me a email from this big law firm in Los Angeles saying that we represent a very well-known producer, and he wants to buy your motion picture rights. Well, I almost fell over. I says, well, 25 years after I wrote that book, well, it happens to be, I find out, Jerry Weintraub.
All right.
Well, so I said, yeah, we went ahead and I did the deal 4 days before I went to state prison, and he put $50,000. I was the only inmate in there with $50,000 in my trust account. So I had a lot of cigarette money back then.
Dude, I am amazed how honest and open you are about everything. If you don't mind, tell us how you ended up in jail in Reno then.
I was out, and I see, I almost died about 8-9 months ago. I was diagnosed with colon cancer back in August of 2012.
Christ.
And I end up with this colon cancer, and the doctor says, hey, dude, this is bad. We're going to have to put you on chemo and radiation. It's very aggressive because it was anal cancer, same thing that killed Farrah Fawcett.
Oh, my, right, yeah,
well,
right.
What they do is they give you very heavy, intense doses of radiation for 3 months every day. I had to go into the hospital, and then very heavy chemo. Well, I got very sick. You know, the chemo takes away your injury and then destroys your white blood cells, and you can get staph and pneumonia and all that fun stuff. So I'm on my deathbed. They put me on the synthetic heroin and Oxycontin. Well, the next thing you know, it triggers my drug addiction to coke and meth, because I said, well, let me try that. Let me see if I can get a little bit of energy going here. Yeah, well, it made me feel good because I could, first time I could get up and get out of bed.
Right.
Well, the next thing you know, we moved to Reno. My family, my mother ends up with, what do they call that? The adult chicken pox, and she gets a stroke, and my brother was dying of AIDS and hepatitis. My sister's got brain cancer and lung cancer.
Then
my father, we go to Reno. My family was transferred to Reno. My father's a big executive. He lost his job. We lost the house. So I was out one night and we drinking, gambling, and then decided to go get some more meth. I went over to my meth dealer and this guy needed a ride, and so I took him, and he says, I got a couple stops. He says, I says, you don't have to take care of me. I says, that's okay. Well, it happens to be this guy found this wallet. Now, I didn't have any knowledge of this wallet. I mean, I thought the credit cards were his at first. Well, they had me in the store on camera, and then he told me, and like a dummy, you know, I had possession. 9/10 of the law in Reno is if they're in your possession, you own them. And they found them in his hotel room. And what I should have done was I didn't make a big deal out of it. I should have told the guy to turn him in, and I didn't do it. Anyway, he takes off. I get left with all the goods. He sees the cop. He takes off. Well, the credit card, two of them were in my car, and then they charged me with the credit cards that were found in the hotel. I had 27 counts of a felon of stolen credit cards. Well, later all that was reduced. Now, I'm going to go. We're going to be sentenced in July, and they brought it down to misuse of a credit card and ID 2 counts. Well, so that's the story.
Are you going to stay at the? Are you going to stay at the Bunny Ranch until then?
Yeah, I'm going to be here with Dennis, and Dennis is my hero. You know,
I bet.
Hollywood turned their back on me. Weintraub turned their back on me. As far as I'm concerned, Damon and Douglas and all of them did. Nobody would help me. Here I'm here. They did a CT scan the jail after 4 months being in there. Well, a little late, but now they found a mass on my liver now.
Oh, Jesus, God.
And so I says, you know, I'm never going to see this film. I'm going to die in jail. And the next thing, you know, one of the cops says, hey, you got a visit from the Bunny Ranch, Mr. Hoff.
Wow.
You want to take it? And I says, well, I wonder what the hell he wants. And one of the inmates says, he's probably going to bail you out. You better take it.
Now, are you going to
tell you something? Dennis is a hell of a guy. They give me royal treatment up here at the Bunny Ranch. All the girls are wonderful. Dennis is just one of the greatest guys you could ever know. He wants nothing in exchange other than my friendship. And we do some advertising out here.
You know, are you going to imbibe in what the Bunny Ranch has to offer? Because I know in the movie you kept telling Lee over and over again, you're bi, that you're bisexual.
Yeah, of course. I mean, come on, the beautiful women up here. How could you not?
Right. There you go. And listen, Scott, you are going to be writing another book, aren't you?
Well, this one's called Behind the Candelabra. Now, my new one is going to be called Beyond the Candelabra.
I would think that would be, you should get on that ASAP, that there is an audience out there for that. And after hearing it.
That's what Dennis and I are working on now. And it leaves off in 87. So I'm going to touch on all the, you know, the Wonderland. The prison sentence, the drugs, everything, the cancer. I mean, it's going to make one hell of a book.
I think so. Listen, give me some of that, Scott. I tell you what, after talking to you here for half an hour, I'm amazed how open and honest about everything you are. And you have great stories. You should get all that down in a book ASAP, dude.
That's a wild life, Scott.
You know, let me ask you one more thing about Lee. I know that you sued him for palimony, which was like the first lawsuit of its kind back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. How did, in the movie, things ended up okay with you and Lee, with Lee calling you into his room when he was dying? Was that an accurate representation of how things ended with you and Lee?
Yes, yes. He called me, you know, after he closed in New York. We went to Los Angeles, the penthouse, for a little bit, and then went to Malibu. He had a house out there. Then he went to Palm Springs. That's where he chose to die. He lived there for 30 years, and that was his favorite home. And so he calls me right before his death, and I go down there and see him. And he was 96 pounds.
Oh my God.
He couldn't even keep his wig on, for crying out loud. I mean, that's how much weight he lost. I mean, it was just, you know, something. Boy, what a tragic death. And here's a man that, you got to give him credit. The guy was the best entertainer, the world's biggest showman. He was Mr. Showmanship. He still is. Well, you know, my book has put him way on top now, you know, and all the attorneys now have run off with all of his fortune and left the poor museum bankrupt.
Right.
So Jerry and I are going to see what we can do, because now that this movie is so big, it's set Liberace. And you know, anybody after that's over 50 or under 50 doesn't know who Liberace is.
Just finding out, dude. Hey, listen, did he ever mention to you about being on Batman?
Yes.
Did he like being on Batman? I didn't like him as a villain.
Yeah, he did. You know, he'd sit there and show me all of you know, his old films and things like that. Batman and, let's see, Lucio Ball, you know, goes on and on. You know, and some of the stories, you know, some of the great people I've met, Lena Horne, a good friend, Lucio Ball, I mean, Mae West. I mean, you know, Hollywood was really excited back then. You know, some of the big stars, Engelbert Humperdinck. I knew them all. I ran with them all. And, boy, I mean, what a life. And so far, I've survived it. All odds were against me. But maybe the man's looking out for me upstairs, I'll tell you that. And he sent me Huff.
Yeah, and he sent you Dennis Hoff. Well, listen.
Dennis Hoff is my hero and my new best friend. I think the world of him. Kind man, honest man. Everything by the book. You couldn't find a better guy than him.
Well, stay up there and have a great time through July, Scott. Again, I got nothing but love for you. I thought this was fascinating talking to you. I would love to have you on again. I appreciate you being so honest
anytime,
about everything.
Get in touch with Dennis, and he'll get in touch with me. And anytime I can, you want me to do your show, I'd love to do it.
Perfect, Scott.
I'd love to get you.
Especially when beyond the camera, when we sell this next deal.
You got that, dude. Hey, listen, last item, Scott, if you wouldn't mind, whenever we have anyone of note on the show, we get them to say, hey, this is your name here, and here's Phantom with the news. Phantom, this is Scott Thorson.
Hello, Scott.
Hey, gang, this is Scott Thorson, and here's Phantom with the news. Are we rolling on that? If we could tape that right now? Are we ready? Would you say that, please?
Oh, you want me to say that?
Yeah. I guess I'm doing a bad job of asking you to please. We want to record it.
Talking to someone else.
Oh, no. I'm talking to you and the guys in the other room. We're all set to record. If you wouldn't mind just giving us a quick, hey, this is Scott Thorson, and here's Phantom with the news.
Hey, this is Scott Thorson. Here's Phantom with the news.
Perfect.
Thanks, Scott.
Like that. Okay.
Awesome. Great talking to you, Scott. Okay. Thank you, my friend.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You got it.
Thanks.
Bye.
Wow.
That was pretty good.
Man.
That was pretty good. I got there was no question that went unanswered.
No, that's true.
No question.